Today's show is brought to you by Athletic Greens. This is a product that is part of my daily routine. And as you know, if you've heard me do these ad reads before, it is part of my daily routine in the sense that every day my wife steals it from me and it takes it for herself. She's been doing this ever since we got our first shipment. I keep waiting for her to get bored and move on to another thing, but that hasn't happened yet. And she continues to swear by it. So what is this stuff? Well, with one delicious scoop of Athletic Greens, you are absorbing 75 high-quality vitamins, minerals, whole food source, superfoods, probiotics, and adaptogens to help you start your day right. This special blend of ingredients supports your gut health, your nervous system, your immune system, your energy, recovery, focus, and aging, all the things. Athletic Greens is lifestyle-friendly, whether you eat keto, paleo, vegan, dairy-free, gluten-free, whatever it is, it contains less than 1 gram of sugar, no GMOs, no nasty chemicals or artificial anything, and still actually tastes pretty good. Tons of people have taken some kind of multivitamin. It's important to choose one with high-quality ingredients that your body will actually absorb. That Athletic Greens costs you less than $3 a day, and you consider it an investment in your health. It's cheaper than your cold brew habit. It's cheaper than getting all the different supplements yourself. You're investing in an all-in-one nutritional insurance. Right now, it's time to reclaim your health and arm your immune system with convenient daily nutrition, especially heading into the flu and cold season. It's just one scoop in a cup of water every day. That's it. No need for a million different pills and supplements to look out for your health. To make it easy, Athletic Greens is going to give you 1 free year supply of immune-supporting vitamin D and 5 free travel packs with your first purchase. All you have to do is visit athleticgreens.com/puck. Again, that's athleticgreens.com/puck to take ownership over your health and pick up the ultimate daily nutritional insurance.
Sticks and hits and goals and saves and slap shots and goons. We've got sportly commentary to a NFL commute. But we also cover movies, TV shows, hits and tunes. It's your weekly bowl of hockey and nonsense.
I'm Ryan Lambert from Elite Prospects.
I'm Sean McAdoo from The Athletic.
Sean, I gotta ask you, right off the top here, what does the date, January 7th, 2011, mean to you?
That was the date. I don't know.
That was the date.
Is it a hockey
Brett
history
Lebda,
thing?
Yes.
Oh, okay. Day, yes.
Yeah. You know immediately.
Yeah. The only well, you said Brett Lebda. There's no.
Yeah.
Brett Lebda.
It's the only thing he's notable for.
Yeah.
He was a -3. Okay. In a game against the Atlanta Thrashers. This is when he's playing for the Toronto Maple Leafs. He's a -3 in a game. The Leafs win 9-3.
Mm-hmm.
So, put another way, his team scored 9 goals. He wasn't on the ice for any of them.
Yep.
His opponent scored 3 goals. He was on the ice for all of them. And that was in the space of less than 14 minutes of ice time.
The all-time greatest. I had made the case previously that this was right up there with, like, Tom Bladen's plus 10 and Theo Fleury's plus 9 on the all-time great plus-minus achievements. Yes. But...
So yeah, the reason this comes up today, it's not well, like the
it should come up every day. I mean, it.
Well, sure.
Yeah.
But this comes up today because a young man named Justin Schultz, the other day, his Washington Capitals, which if I had asked you with a gun to your head, what team does Justin Schultz play
absolutely
for?
Absolutely not.
No, of course.
Absolutely not. In fact, I'm on his hockey reference page and he's still wearing like a Penguins jersey.
Sure.
So.
His Capitals beat the Montreal Canadiens 8-4. He's on the ice for 16 and a half minutes, thereabouts. And he is a -4 in that game.
Yep. So, I mean, is this more impressive, equally impressive to the Brett Lebda game? Like, do we have a new face to chisel into that Mount Rushmore of?
Let me put it as simply, like, let me lay out the case for and against.
Okay.
The case for is he's a minus four in a game where his team scores 8 goals, right? Mm-hmm. But the interesting thing is, and this is maybe the against part, or it could be the for part, depending on your perception here. He scored a goal in this game. He scored a power play goal.
Ah.
So, does that make it more impressive that he even scored a goal, not just was on the ice for a goal, but scored it himself late in the third period of what was already a blowout?
See, I didn't realize that. And mm-hmm. I feel like that does kind of change it, but now I'm going to go and look at the Brett Lebda game and see if he was actually on this. Because, of course, when you're talking about plus minus...
No, he
minus,
didn't do shit. He had one shot on goal and no points in that game.
I want to see if he was on the ice for any of the goals for. Because, of course, plus minus, power play goals do not count. So it is, we say...
And the Leafs scored 5 power play goals.
Okay. Now, but also, he was Brett Lebda, so...
Yeah, so why would he be on the power play?
Yeah.
I would be shocked. But so my point is it more impressive that he was a minus four in an 8-4 game despite having scored one of the goals? Or does that make it like, oh, well, I mean, he was on the ice for at least one of the goals.
See, I'm kind of leaning towards that, that second interpretation. Although, you know, maybe this is just the Leafs homer in me.
I really want to keep that locked down for old.
Exactly.
BL.
All right. I got it. Sorry. I'm attempting to scroll on the NHL website. And if you know
good luck.
How that works. All right. Brett Lebda, I believe, was number 23.
You are correct about that.
And he was indeed on the ice for one of the Leafs goals, a power play goal. He was on the ice for the 9th goal. A power play goal by Phil Kessel, which, you know, good on the Leafs. They were up 8-1 at the time, still sending Phil Kessel's power play unit out there.
Just really stepping on the gas.
Yeah.
They hated the Thrashers, famously, the team everybody hated.
So, to me, this puts Schultz right back in the conversation. I think that, because, I mean, again, like you, to run the analytics, it's 12 goals. 9 plus 3 equals 12.
Yeah.
You know what 8 plus 4 is? Also 12. And you got to go... 12 for 12, the minus four is a better, more impressive sounding number. But, you know, 9-3 is a bigger blowout than 8-4. I don't know. I'm going to have to sit on this for a little while. The other problem is that with Justin Schultz, I don't feel like 10 years from now, this will instantly be the thing that people remember when you hear his name. Whereas
Because with Lebda, it was months of Leafs fans going, this guy sucks. Can we get this guy off the team? Oh, my God. And then for him to go out and be a minus three in a 9-3 game.
Truly impressive.
People were like, see?
And the other thing, bonus
what
points.
What else do we have to say?
Bonus points for doing it against a team that doesn't exist anymore.
Mm-hmm,
whereas Schultz did it against the Montreal Canadiens, so fingers crossed, but so far they still exist. I haven't checked this morning, but I think they're probably
they did lose last night. Well, and while we're talking about the Canadiens, I forgot to put this on the rundown, but nice to see Carey Price back, huh?
It's great to see Carey Price back.
Now his teammates who have scored 0 goals for him,
they don't like him, obviously.
They're pissed. They hate it.
Get out of here.
He's been pretty good too. Like, he hasn't been unbelievable or anything, but he's been very solid behind a team that sucks.
Mm-hmm.
So
put it this way, he's been good enough so far. You know, if he keeps this up for the rest of the season, he hasn't hurt his market value as far as moving him. I think that's what you were maybe a little nervous about, because everyone seems to agree that there's probably. That a trade would maybe be in the best interest of Montreal and maybe him as well, and that's going to be explored in the offseason. It'll be hard to do given the contract situation. But obviously, if he comes back and he's just garbage for a month, even though you could understand it given the circumstances, that maybe makes him untradeable. And no, he's played well. So we're going to wait and see which team, which contender loses in the first round because of goaltending, and then... Mm-hmm. Panics and goes out and gets Carey Price for 13 more years or whatever.
At the end of my What We Learn column every week, I do like the worst HF boards trade I saw from that week. like trade proposal, you know, how they're like, mm-hmm. oh, what's the value of whatever? And one from a couple weeks ago, or maybe it was just this past week. I already forget. But it was basically like Jonathan Toews for Carey Price and then some side items.
Mm-hmm.
And it's like, boy, Jonathan Toews, if he's going to be crying about how, you know, they're not including me in the decision-making process yep. or whatever in Chicago, oh boy, it wouldn't go great in Montreal either, huh?
I think definitely if you're Chicago and you're going to tear the heart and soul out of your three-time cup-winning core, you definitely want to get a guy back who's just as old and has just as bad a contract.
And signed for, I think, four extra years?
Yeah. Yeah. You want to make your cap situation worse.
Mm-hmm. Absolutely. Absolutely.
And then you send Patrick Kane to the Panthers for Sergei Bobrovsky. And there's your goalie tandem for the next generation. Who says no?
Yeah. So speaking of the Washington Capitals, right? I don't think they played last night. I think they play tonight, but they are within very close striking distance here of the Pittsburgh Penguins for third in the Metro, mm-hmm. which is, they're a point back with a game in hand. So ahead of them
in points percentage.
Yeah. When they inevitably beat Vegas tonight.
Got an easy game tonight. So
that's right. Did anybody see that coming? Like a month ago,
mm-hmm.
you think the Caps are going to pass the Penguins? Now, look, we didn't see the Penguins absolutely shitting the bed down the stretch. We didn't see Tristan Jarry being week to week with whatever lower body injury he has. We didn't see the Capitals. They're not even like that hot. They were for a little while, but they've cooled off maybe slightly. I don't know. I like a shocking turn of events. And then Tampa is pretty much doing the same thing while Boston, dealing with a ton of its own injuries, also closes that gap. And that also could end up being a flip-flop so that, you know, again, the wildcard teams, there's a very real possibility that they end up being Pittsburgh and Tampa.
Which is pretty wild. And that's like, I mean,
crazy.
I know that I have, for the last month or so, at least the last few weeks, been talking about Florida, Washington, right? This is it. This is the one matchup we know in the East. Sure. And, you know, Florida's going to get Washington was maybe the only, you know, I remember it was like 2 weeks ago I was writing about how the East is eight teams that are all pretty much the same, but maybe not Washington. Maybe Washington's the one easy team. And Florida's going to get them. So, hey, perfect. Florida gets a nice warm-up. We know this is a team that doesn't have a lot of playoff success. They get a quote-unquote easy matchup in the first round to kind of find their feet. This is going to be great for the Florida Panthers. And now you're sitting there going, I mean, maybe at this point you'd rather play Pittsburgh based on how they're playing, based on the goaltending situation. But, like, hey, congratulations. You just had the single greatest season in the history of the franchise where everything clicked perfectly in the regular season. You're going to finish probably second for the President's Trophy, might even win it. Here's Sidney Crosby in the first round. Congratulations.
Yeah, that's right. Like, yeah, the Panthers look like they're going to be one of the 10 or 11 teams ever to clear 120 points in the regular season.
Mm-hmm.
And yeah, like the loser point, all that shit. I get it. But that's a crazy achievement.
Yep.
And yeah, like you say, it's like, oh yeah, good luck in the first round. Now, granted, again, Sidney Crosby in the first round, yeah, you don't like that. Casey DeSmith in the first round, maybe you're okay with it.
You take that. That's a little bit better. And then the Tampa-Boston race, of course, will determine who plays the Leafs in a series where the Leafs, at this point, it looks like will have home ice advantage. Yep. And I mean, I saw somebody tweet it last night where they're like, the way Tampa's playing, they look like they don't want to play the Leafs. And
go ahead. Sorry.
Yeah. And it wasn't like some Leafs homer saying that. It was somebody. And I was like, maybe you don't want to play the Leafs, but if the alternative is you're playing the Hurricanes, or I guess maybe the Rangers, like, Are you changing your strategy down the stretch to get that? I don't know. To me, it'd be fascinating only because we've been talking all year long about Florida, Toronto, Tampa as the trio, not just to have mm-hmm. Boston jump in there, but to have Tampa go to the other division in the playoffs. Like,
right.
How great is that? If you're Florida, you're sitting there going, all right, yeah, we got to play. Yeah, maybe we play Pittsburgh, but Toronto and Boston, you know, they're going to bash each other's heads in for 7 games, and we don't have to worry about Tampa until the conference final now. Pretty good. Setting sure. up pretty well for them.
Yeah, the other thing with that is, you know, like you say, it's not, I think it's more of a thing of Tampa playing like they hit a fucking wall because yep. they've played 190 hockey games in the last 24 yep. months.
And also like, being, an experienced team that knows that ultimately you got to beat all these teams anyway. So they're not, you know, I don't think they're going pedal all the way to the floor down yeah. the stretch.
Who's looking at any team in the East like, oh, that's a favorable matchup for us at this point?
Yeah.
Like with the way even Washington's playing all of a sudden, it's like, oh no, every matchup would actually kind of suck, I think.
Like I'm a Leafs fan, right? I'm sitting there, like if you told what? Me, it doesn't come up often, but it's, if you told me Tampa Bay, the two-time defending champs, like they're basically an all-star team, have the best goaltender, arguably in the world. You're going to play them in the first round. I'd be like, oh no. And then you came to me and you're like, actually change your plans. It's not them. But
oh,
instead,
that's nice. I like
you
that.
You got to play Boston, the team that, what? You know, not only has beaten you several times, but also, what's Boston's thing? They, have the best, defensive forward in the entire league and the best defensive first line in the entire league that makes other teams' first lines disappear. Hey, Toronto, you're not like a top heavy first line team at all, are you? Jeez, yeah, like, and there's nothing. What are we playing for, man?
That Bruins-Blues game last night was so funny because it's like they didn't have Pasternak, they didn't have Hampus Lindholm, and the hottest offensive team in the league right now, the St. Louis Blues, they were just like, yeah, we're going to hold them to like 22 shots. Who gives a shit?
Yep.
It doesn't like, matter.
I feel like if you're a Leafs fan, I think you would rather play Boston than Tampa in the sense that I like the Leafs' odds against Boston better than a healthy Tampa.
Nobody
team.
Clip that. Nobody yeah. clip that. But, use it against him.
Yeah, but here's the thing. But not only could Boston absolutely beat the. I mean, you don't even have to imagine. You know, it's super easy to picture Boston beating the Leafs. And the other thing is, if you're like, if the Leafs play Tampa and it's a run and gun series and they lose in 7 games against the two-time champs, that's going to be very, very bad. And it's going to play very badly in Toronto. If you lose to Boston again, that is the nightmare scenario of like, we have to blow this thing up. Like if you're someone who doesn't like the Leafs and you're rooting for chaos and for this, you know, the market to turn against the team and have to be blown up, Boston's the opponent you want because they're the ones yep. that, you know, you can maybe twist it a little. If you lose to Tampa, you go, hey, man, we lost the two-time champs. We gave them everything they could handle. And, you know, obviously if you get swept, it's a different deal. But you can lose to Tampa and hold your head up against Boston. Just given the history, everyone's going to be sitting there going, you lose to these guys every year. You can't build a team that can beat these guys. Forget it. Start over.
Right. Yeah.
And then it's chaos, which is fun yep. for everyone except Toronto fans.
You. Yeah. Let's go to the West. And speaking of hitting a wall and what have you, the Vegas Golden Knights have...
It's not going to happen. This is...
Seem to have done that, yeah.
The last 24 hours has been the first time that I've, like, accepted that this isn't going to happen for them. I've been
the whole
way... That
Kings win last night, I was like, it's over. It's done.
Yeah. And losing to New Jersey. I mean, that's just... That
well,
can't
sure, yeah,
happen.
Of course.
That absolutely... No. Cannot. I know they played well. I know that this and that, and you know they got goalied a little bit by Andrew Hammond. But it just can't happen. Like these guys are going to miss the playoffs. I mean, at this point, LA's 5 points clear. It's maybe more Dallas that they're chasing because
yeah,
they've got a game against
Dallas.
They're
hoping to catch Dallas. They've got a game against Dallas, and I think Dallas plays the Oilers tonight. The Oilers are also a very hot team right now.
Mm-hmm.
We can talk about that a little bit more later. But not a super winnable game for the Stars tonight, and so that does make things a little more interesting for Vegas.
Yeah. And
but
and
they
the
also
other
have the extra game played
with Dallas because they have got the crazy overtime record and all. Like they don't have the regulation wins, so they lose the tiebreaker to everyone basically.
Yeah.
So that's good news in theory for Vegas, but. You have to pay basically pencil them in to win that Dallas game in regulation to even get to a scenario where it starts to feel realistic again. And then yeah, maybe. And by the way, if they did that, if they caught Dallas for the last wild card, how's Vegas versus Colorado in the first round grab you?
Oh my God.
Talk about here's your reward for a great, like, hey, you go Colorado, 120 points, President's Trophy. Here's the other team everyone else thought was the best on paper all season long.
And they added Jack Eichel, yeah.
Yeah, with Jack Eichel and, you know, who knows what the goaltending is there. But yikes. And no salary cap, so they get their full $100 million lineup against you.
Yep. I guess that comes down to will everybody be healthy and blah, blah, blah as well, because I think it's pretty obvious that, like, Mark Stone still isn't playing it. Anything close to 100%, and they activated him kind of out of necessity more than so. Like there is that, and Pacioretty, I guess you would say the same thing. But it's tough sledding, and as you say, the fact that the Kings are 5 points clear of them after that win last night. Like I wrote it down when I put the outline for this episode together. Kings also hit a wall, but it might not matter. That seems like it kind of is the case because, yeah, they beat the Ducks last night. Who cares, right? That's not that impressive. Everybody beats the Ducks unless they're the Arizona Coyotes.
Mm-hmm. It was a tough game.
Yeah.
Jonathan Quick had to go old school.
He did, yeah. No, he was unbelievable last night. But so, you know, again, like it that got them 5 points clear. If they lose that game and it's the 3 points and Vegas has a game in hand, you're like, okay, this is still doable. I don't think it's doable now. And yeah, I mean, what a wild race it's ended up being, where again, like it's four teams, maybe even five. If you want to talk about Vancouver, we'll get to them in a second as well. The Pacific feels locked in now, and so it's four teams effectively playing for the wild card.
Yeah, and how excited are you if you're the Oilers right now? Not only are you playing great, your goaltending's been better, but you're going to get the Kings without Drew Doughty, which is not an easy, but I mean, that is, like, if you had to pick one team out of the 16 playoff teams for your team to play, it's the Kings, right? Like, and yet it's the Oilers who are going to get that matchup. Probably, you know, might not even get to 100 points on the year. They're going to get, in theory, the best matchup and maybe even the matchup with the 16th seeded team in terms of total points.
Yeah.
And God bless the takes we're going to get out of that, if that's what ends up happening.
that's right. But yeah, so as you mentioned, the Oilers, like I was looking at this the other day. I wrote an article about, like, oh, how good, because they they kicked the shit out of Vegas, right? They beat them like 4-0, and it wasn't really even close. And I was like, yeah, but like, how much of this just is the goalies? And the answer is some of it, obviously, but like, the goalies have improved a lot under Woodcroft. But they're still only like 905 or 908 or something like that. Not even like above league average, like right around league average. And that's been plenty to get this team to, like, oh, this is one of the hottest teams in the league.
Mm-hmm.
And the underlying numbers for their bottom six all still stink. In fact, in some ways they've gotten worse under Woodcroft than they were under Tippett. But McDavid and Dreisaitl are just like, oh, if you can give us like 900-ish goaltending, you're going to win like 10 games in a row pretty consistently. It's fucking crazy.
Mm-hmm. Yep. And it's, you know, I've already seen the kind of the narrative getting spun out of Edmonton that actually it's not that the goaltending is better. It's that the defense has become better in front of the goaltending, and that's what's allowed the goaltending. And like you say, there's some truth to it, though. But it's
look
not
at the numbers,
a lot.
Look at the expected goals, look at the scoring chances.
And the other interesting thing,
they're not that much better.
The other interesting thing in Edmonton is this: you're kind of seeing it play out in the media, which usually means it's playing out behind the scenes, although not always. But the like, has Jay Woodcroft already earned an extension? Versus, should we wait until we see how the playoffs goes? And, you know, you can see some people pushing that, no, lock him up right now, which, of course, if you were Jay Woodcroft, is what you want. We'll see. We'll see if Ken Holland takes the bait or if he wants to wait and see what happens in the playoffs.
Yeah. I don't know. I think it's kind of academic at this point that you got to extend him. If you go, oh, you know, our first coach, whatever, I don't remember how many points that he had, you know, at the time he was fired, but in roughly the same number of games, Jay Woodcroft has way more fucking points than that, you know? And
but,
that
I mean,
was
if,
after
if,
a bit
if
of
you're
a
Ken
stuff.
Holland, do you extend him regardless of what happens in the playoffs, knowing that, you know, some of this is just the goaltenders got hot or got better, at least.
Yeah, they stopped being cold.
Yeah, I mean, you know, we often joke about, you know, coaches coming in and telling the goaltenders to make a save, and that is a little bit of what's happening in Edmonton. Do you extend the guy for that, or would you say, no, I want to see the playoffs and then see how the offseason looks and figure it out from there?
I guess I'd rather make my decision based on, like, the 40 games in the right, because, you know, like, Chicago beat these guys in the playoffs a few years ago. Well, not the playoffs, I guess the play-in, right? I'm not making that up. So it's like, yeah, you know, playoffs are really random shit. Like, if they, let's put it this way, if they lose to the Kings and it's because the goalie's turned back into a pumpkin, that's Ken Holland's fault. What's Jay Woodcroft supposed to do? These guys stink, you know?
That's true, yep.
Really interesting in Edmonton right now, but the team that's most interesting in the Western Conference, I think, is the Vancouver Canucks. They're on a bit of a heater right now. But I don't know. They're making it way more interesting than it ever should have been. And
I feel like I've written them off several times. And
understandably so.
Look, and they're back in. I mean, last night hurts a lot. For they got the point against Ottawa, but it's Ottawa. You've got to
win that game.
Points in that. But yeah. Points in, what is it now, 8 straight?
Something like that, yeah.
They're making it interesting.
And they've gotten to the point where they have a better goal difference than a ton of teams, but at Los Angeles and Dallas specifically, they're closing in on Nashville in that regard. And it's like, oh, shit. You know, and we said it at the time, but it's really, really, really hard to look at what they've done under Bruce Boudreau and go, or to arrive at anything other than, boy, they should have made this coaching change like a month early.
Yeah. Yeah. Even a week could end up making the difference, but.
Absolutely. But like, imagine where they'd be. It feels like they'd be comfortably third in the division. If they pull the trigger even 2 weeks earlier, you know, because that all comes with, you know, whatever, like a 5-game losing streak, something like that. So, yeah, they're just a fascinating team. I think I said it on here last week, but, like, how do you not watch every single Vegas, LA, Dallas, Nashville, and Vancouver game the entire rest of the season?
Mm-hmm.
It's, yeah. It's been so fun because there's all these teams losing these extremely winnable games, including Vancouver, or like, you know, still getting a point out of not a well played game like St. Louis last night and that kind of stuff, or even Vancouver. But yeah, just it's really cool. I guess the last thing we should mention is that the Blues, they look like they're gonna probably end up not having home ice in
still. They went on a tear, but the Wild, to their credit, have been holding them
also
off
on a tear.
Even losing to them the one OT game. But yeah, those are two really good teams, and it's the one playoff matchup we already know. Right, that one is locked in. It's going to be a hell of a series, man. That's going to be really good.
Yeah.
And home ice might matter. I mean, these teams are both, you know, just pure wins and losses. Minnesota's 21-19 on the road. St. Louis, 20-17. Not great records. And much better than that at home. This is going to matter. And the other piece of that is the Blues' record against the Wild head-to-head is very, very good. And you know, people are wondering, does that tend to matter? And the answer is not necessarily. There's, you can certainly find examples of teams dominating a season series or even over a course of a couple of years and getting the same result in the playoffs. And you can find examples of that generating the exact opposite. So to be determined, but you know, maybe if the Blues can get in their heads just a little bit,
just a little bit
might help, yeah. You know,
The other thing, how about this, Sean? So the Blues have the highest shooting percentage in the league this season. They're a rush team. They score a lot on the power play. Like, it makes a little bit of sense that that they're going to be pretty effective shooting, I guess.
Mm-hmm.
But what rank do you think their their shooting percentages in the entire cap era the advanced stats era?
Are they top 10?
Yeah, they're number two.
Yikes. Okay.
The second highest shooting percentage since 2007-08, the St. Louis Blues team. And, like, you know, again, they have some really good players. They definitely improved their forward group this summer, Buchnevich and all that. Like, yeah, absolutely. They are not the second most skilled team of the cap era. I think a Tampa Bay, one of the Tampa Bay teams of recent vintage, is the one team ahead of them, or maybe a recent Colorado team. But it was a team where I was like, obviously they weren't that good, but they were really good. They had a really good roster, and the Blues doesn't really compare to that. And so what's interesting, again, this is something we'll get to on the other side of the break that's coming up here in a second, but they're going to be going up against the best goaltending tandem since the trade deadline.
Yep. It's going to be
object, irresistible force, etc.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
And the other thing is, you look at the schedule, the next six games for both Minnesota and St. Louis, they're pretty similar in that they play their next four mostly against, you know, quote unquote bad teams, and then finish against good teams. Minnesota finishes Calgary, Colorado. St. Louis finishes Colorado, Vegas. But those games probably won't mean anything. They won't mean anything to Colorado or Calgary. Vegas will probably be, by that point, out of the playoffs and deflated, and nobody, you know, all the injured guys won't be playing. The one that's a little tricky in there is Minnesota's got Nashville, which could be a really important game. And I said six games, St. Louis only got five. So it's completely up in the air, and it's going to be about banking the points against the bad teams and then, you know, probably facing backup goalies against some of those better teams. We'll see.
Hope. Yeah. All right. We'll take a break. We'll be right back. This episode of Puck Soup is brought to you by Bird Dogs. Bird Dogs are changing the game in pants and shorts, and that's because they make shorts, pants, and joggers from the finest high-quality materials, and they come with built-in liners that give you all-day support and comfort. You don't want to be uncomfortable, so it's time to upgrade to the shorts and pants of the future. Go check out all the pants, shorts, and joggers Bird Dogs have to offer. They sent me a few pairs of pants and a few pairs of shorts. Haven't worn the shorts yet. Not really the weather for it here in Boston, but I've worn the joggers quite a bit since they first came. They come in a few different colors and styles. I've worn them like around town, just walking the dog, just sitting around the apartment, that kind of thing. Super comfortable, super functional, all that kind of thing. A lot of pockets and zippers and stuff like that. So you can use them pretty much anywhere you want to go. So here's what you're going to want to do. You go to birddogs.com, enter the promo code PUCK, and when you make an order, they will throw in a free Bird Dogs Dad hat. That's birddogs.com, promo code PUCK, and boom, a free Bird Dogs Dad hat with your pair of Bird Dogs. You will not take these things off, I promise you. Hey, we're back, and now is the time that we will do a roundup of stories on The Athletic this week, because people were talking about them the last few days. Why don't we lead off with the lighter of the two? And Pierre LeBrun the other day had a story about how the NHL almost went to a 3-2-1-0 point system in 2004-05. And then instead they didn't have a hockey season.
Yeah, which, you know, same deal. And then I guess talked about it for a few years after, and then at the time felt like they were already making so many big changes that they didn't want to go any further, which maybe makes sense. And then it doesn't sound like it's come up since. And partly because, it sounds like partly because Brian Burke just yells at anyone who brings it up. And partly because they believe the current system works great.
Now, the reason this became interesting to me, because otherwise I'd have been like, it happened fucking 15 years ago, who cares, whatever, you know, more than that, actually. So Alex Faust, a buddy of mine, and he's the Kings broadcaster or play-by-play guy, obviously, he had like a little Twitter thread where he's like, it's actually not as, 3-2-1 actually isn't as good as what we have now in terms of incentivizing like actual exciting play.
Really?
Yeah, because his contention is it does kind of the current system doesn't as fully incentivize conservative play in the third period, basically. When you're tied or whatever, like you're just like, ah, fuck it, we'll go to overtime and you know, like it's interesting. I'll just quote him here. He goes, "The current system is at times artificial, but IMO, this would further incentivize conservative play late in games because the downside of a regulation loss is worse." Do you see the would a 3-2-1 system be more fair? Perhaps, but the joy of our current system with the 3-on-3 overtime is that we encourage fun because there's less downside risk. And yes, I still hate the shootout. Don't know how we fix that.
Okay, so I'm sorry. And this came from who?
Alex Faust from the Kings broadcast.
Okay. I don't see how that follows. I mean, the downside of a regulation loss is 0 points under both systems.
Yeah.
So, I mean, I guess the idea that you're concerned about what your opponent is going to get, which I think we have ample evidence now is not something that teams...
Yeah,
except true. For specific playoff races. Obviously, if you're, you know, when Dallas plays Vegas in a few games, they will be looking at regulation versus... But I think it's become very clear the way that teams play for overtime now, and there's been multiple studies that have shown that, you know, scoring plunges late in tied games, you can see there's clips going around you can find of 30 seconds left, tie game, and the team is just standing in its own end.
Yeah.
While the other team makes no effort to go and chase them. That, it doesn't seem to me that teams are right now playing like, oh, you know what, we've got... let's win it in regulation because that will hurt the other team, even though we're getting the same 2 points.
Yeah, I see what you're saying.
I don't see it. Because that's the other argument against 3-2-1 that I have seen that I would like to think about more and see more evidence for or against. But the argument is basically, yes, we very clearly have teams playing for overtime now when the game is tied. The third period of a tied game in the NHL is nowhere near as fun as it should be. However, under a 3-2-1 system, if a team has a one-goal lead in the third period, do they then just shut it down even more than they do today? Because today, they know if they get scored on, okay, I can still go to overtime and get my 2 points, whereas under a 3-2-1, they've got the extra point for winning in regulation, so they lock it down even more.
And I think that's what Alex is saying.
That makes sense to me in one sense. My counterargument to that is, like, look at what the NHL has become. Do we think teams aren't locking it down with one-goal leads? Like, look at the record of every team when they're leading going into the third period. You know, the Leafs are like 37-1 when they go into it. This is the Leafs, the team that always blows the leads. And even they almost never lose in regulation. It's a league where everybody locks it down. Like, could it happen even more? I guess. But does anybody else really feel like there's a dial somewhere on locking it down when you have a lead and coaches aren't turning it all the way to the max already? I don't buy that, and I don't buy it to the degree that outweighs all the other positives that this brings. The one of the interesting things about LeBrun's piece is that I guess originally one of the thoughts was, let's do it in the AHL for a year or two and see how it changes things, and then they just didn't. And that seems to me like a no-brainer. Like, let's find out. You know, maybe Alex or whoever ends up being right. We see, you know, I'm always saying whenever we change anything, there's always unintended consequences. So if we can find out what those are, great. But then, you know, the AHL guy was like, yeah, they never called back. We were ready to do it. You could tell that he was like, I don't understand why we didn't test it because it's clearly better.
I understand why. It's the NHL.
Yeah. The one thing on this whole debate is, at the very least, if I accomplish nothing, which seems to be what I'm on pace to do on this subject, but if I accomplish nothing, let me at least get people to stop saying or accepting that the current system makes the playoff races closer. And that's because that still is the NHL's go-to argument. They go, the playoff races are closer. This current system works. And it's wrong on multiple levels. Because first of all, it doesn't, having a loser point doesn't make the playoff races closer because everyone gets loser points. That's just basic, you know, if you're giving out free points to everybody at roughly the same rate, you're not helping anybody keep the playoff races closer. And by the way, why should we want to keep the playoff races closer? Because by saying that, what you're saying is closer than they should be. You're saying we're going to put a thumb on the scale and help a team that should be 5 points back be closer than that. Well, why? The playoff races should be as close as they deserve to be based on how well the teams are playing. But even putting that aside, by giving out like extra points for regulation wins, you're not making the races any less close other than in the very raw numbers. Like, yes, if your team is 3 wins behind the team they're chasing, today that would translate to 6 points. Under this system, it could translate to 9 points. But that doesn't mean the race isn't as close. It just means you're still 3 wins back. We just give out, I mean, in the way the NHL tells it, we should make all wins worth 1 point and make ties worth half a point. And then the races would be really close. Everybody would be like 1 point apart. But that would be stupid because
of course it would be.
But I honestly feel like when the NHL says, oh, the playoff races are closer, they think that you as a fan are so dumb that you're going to see a bigger number and be like, oh, team further away, me no watch game. Like, how dumb do they think you are?
Hockey fans are very dumb, and they are correct.
Yeah. Look, here's if you ever see anything that says, like, well, but look, the playoff races are closer, we have a hard salary cap. It was put in place specifically with the goal of creating parity, of making the bad teams have to come back to the pack, of making the good teams have more ability to pick up those players and get better.
Right.
Of course there's more parity now. If somebody tries to compare the playoff races now to like the 1980s and then says, see, the loser point works, they're conning you. There's really no nice way to put it. They are just conning you. And the reason the league has to do this is because, of course, they can't say the real reason they like the current system is that it inflates everybody's record. It's a marketing exercise. It makes it so that we take all the wins and put them in one big pile, and we take all the losses and divide them up into two smaller piles, and it looks great as long as you don't think about it too much. And our GMs like that, because our GMs like to be over 500. That's it. That's the whole reason we have this. And at the very least, I need people to see that. And then if we don't fix it, then fine. But every time Gary Bettman says, well, it makes the playoff races closer, like 10 hands in the room should go up from people saying, follow-up question, do you think we're stupid? That is right. Continues to be the offer, the explanation that you offer.
Yeah, we need to fly you to wherever the cup final is. So when Gary does his state of the league, you can be the one to actually ask that question, because yeah. Nobody else will ever ask that question in that way, certainly.
Yeah. So. And look, the problem here is I wrote a piece a week ago, I guess, about the loser point. And it wasn't about the loser point being bad, although of course I went on several rants about that. But it was about the whole idea of is it
here and there.
Yeah. Is it a loser point? Is it a bonus point and everything? And as always happens whenever you write about this, comment section just fills up. People love diving in and arguing about this stuff. And what they do is everybody gives you their formula of what it should be. So some people want it to be 3-2-1. Some people want it to be just 2 points for a win, no points for a loss. That's it. It doesn't matter if you lose in shootout or overtime or whatever. Some people want to bring back ties. Some people want to extend overtime. There's a ton of different visions out there. And that's part of the problem. Everybody has their own little system they prefer. And it creates this a scenario where it feels like nobody agrees on this situation. There's right. so many, everyone's just arguing. So you know what? If everyone's going to argue, keep the status quo. But what's interesting to me is I had 400 plus comments. There was not one single comment in that whole section from anybody going, I like the current system. And
sure.
like you would know as well as anybody, anytime you write anything about the NHL should change something, you immediately hear from people going, no, it shouldn't. I like how it currently is. Whatever it is, no matter how obvious it seems to you, when I write that we should treat the puck over glass thing as icing and not make it a penalty, I hear from a ton of people going, no, I like it that it's a penalty. And here's why. You can't say anything
right.
this league should do differently without people furiously defending the status quo, except on this. Nobody thinks the current system is the right one. Nobody thinks this is good.
So let me say this about 3-2-1. Is all of college hockey moved to it this mm-hmm. year? It made things insanely fucking confusing. And like, I think that's a really good argument against it.
How so? So how did it?
So let me pull up the college hockey standings, right? So in the big picture, right? Like in the national picture, it everything just still counted as win-loss tie, like mm-hmm. for nationwide standings and stuff like that.
Okay.
But in conferences, you had to parse out what was a regulation win, what was a regulation loss, what was an overtime win, what was an overtime loss, and shootout wins and losses counted as ties in the national standings. Like, if it went to a shootout, it was a tie. But in conference play, the shootout still counted as a 2-1.
Okay. That seems to me like a poorly implemented system, not...
That's correct, yeah. No, it definitely was. But with that having been said, even, like, so here was the issue, right? Is if it's wins and losses, but, like, then the way the national tournament rankings are calculated, like, overtime wins counted for 55% of a win and overtime losses counted for... It was just like, you can't fucking keep it straight. Like, win-loss tie should be win-loss tie. Like, if we're mm-hmm. saying ties still exist, right? And so the thing that I have increasingly come around to is, again, if we're saying ties still exist, it should be the soccer-style 3-1-0.
Right.
Because that really rewards you for winning a game, no matter how you win it.
Mm-hmm.
You are penalized for only playing to a tie, and then if you lose, you don't get shit.
So what would that look like? Are we talking No shootouts.
Shootout counts as a tie. But oh, okay. And then maybe you make it like a tiebreaker or something like that. Like, okay, if you have X number of shootout wins and you're tied with this team in the standings, whatever team has more shootout wins.
If you're going to do soccer, I'd say you get rid of the shootout.
You're preaching to the choir. But
and then you do 10 minutes of 3-on-3. Because part of the problem when we got rid of ties, it wasn't that the concept of a tie was so awful. It was the teams had like 20 or 25 of them a year. Like a quarter of your games. I think if teams had 3 or 4 a year, which is maybe what we would get if we had 3-on-3 overtime, and probably even less than that, because there'd be less overtime under if we were giving incentivizing wins. You know, if you knew you couldn't just sit back and wait for the loser point fairy to show up, there'd be less overtime. And almost all the overtime would get resolved after 10 minutes of 3-on-3. You know, I think if you had 3 or 4 ties in your record, it wouldn't be the end of the world. I don't know. I know some people, again, that's a situation where I say, hey, we could bring back ties. And I will hear from a ton of people saying, I hate ties. No ties, absolutely not. Deal breaker, which is fine. It's just very remarkable to me that nobody does that for the current point system. But the problem is then everybody says, you know, somebody says 3-2-1, somebody else says this, somebody else has their view, somebody else comes in and goes, what if we gave 4 points for this? And you're like, oh, Christ. And somebody else is like, what if it was 5 points? And someone else has half points.
At one point in the 90s, college hockey had a 5-4-3-2-1-0 system. Which, like, again, that just feels like you're slicing it too thin, but also, you know, if the difference between a regulation win and a regulation loss is 5 fucking points, holy shit. You know, like everybody's going to be playing regulation with their hair on fire.
Yeah.
You know?
And I get that, you know, some people, the other argument against 3-2-1 is it's different. And, you know, it would take some getting used to, you know, now what used to be a 100-point team is a 150-point team, and you could have teams could get 170 or 180 points, and all those old Habs teams and Oilers teams, all the records go out the window. But it's not that tough to adjust, right? You divide by 1.5, multiply by 1.5, and you can compare the records. And it's at least it would be different, and the standings would change in an honest way, as opposed to how they've changed for the last 20 years, which is in this weird unspoken way where they still look like they used to with the three columns, but the three columns don't mean the same thing, and all the points numbers are higher. It would just be, I don't know. I think I'm at the point now where give me a system that's different than the current one that no longer has more points for games that go past regulation, because that incentivizes teams to just play for the tie, and that, you know, give me that and I'm happy. I will support whatever you've got. But it's, unfortunately, there's 10 other versions of the system out there. Everybody picks their favorite one, and then there's nothing resembling a consensus to overturn a system that nobody other than the 32 GMs and Gary Bettman actually like. It's maddening.
Yeah. All right, let's move on to the other Athletic story that made headlines. Big expose on recently departed Eugene Melnyk, prompting many to say too soon, and many others to say, well, if the story is that a bunch of people wouldn't speak out because they were afraid of reprisal until the guy was literally not alive anymore, that actually makes it more of a story.
Yeah.
So, I mean, I don't think we have to guess where both of us kind of fell on the too soon debate. We both were like, no, the appropriate time is any time. Like
the appropriate time for a story like this is when the story is ready. And I can tell you, you know, the reason this story didn't go out when Eugene Melnyk was still alive is that it wasn't ready yet. It hadn't. You know, everybody, especially when you're talking about some of the allegations and some of the stories that are included in this, you've got to be sure, and you've got to really know that you're being accurate and you're being fair and all of that. And you got to get it to the finish line, and it wasn't there yet. That team had been working on this for a long time. This was not something that just Eugene Melnyk died and everybody said, hey, let's write a story about him. This was, I think Ian has said, 95% of the way there. But it had been sort of stuck at 95% for a little while. And unfortunately, the unfortunate truth is when Eugene Melnyk passed away, some people who had been afraid to speak up were now willing to speak up. And that's what makes it over the finish line.
An important story is like if people were so afraid that he would fire them or try to ruin their life or whatever.
Yep.
This whole time, that actually, again, that like makes it more important.
Yeah.
Because it's like, you know, the culture of fear or whatever, like, or, you know, the detail in the story that people would get fired and then show up the next day like nothing happened and nothing would happen. You know, like, just, you know, it's not a really, it doesn't sound like the best place to work. And so the fact that all these people were like, yeah, I literally want to wait until he's not alive anymore to like, speak out about this because I can finally breathe easier. Like, that's crazy.
As I said on the other show, and if you haven't heard it, I mean, first of all, please do read the story. And then on my show with Ian, who's one of the reporters on the story, we talked more about the timing and everything. And then there was a round table with he and Katie and Dan, to go over the sort of the process of reporting this out. But the point I made on that show is this story doesn't belong to Eugene Melnyk. This isn't a Eugene Melnyk story. We've had a million Eugene Melnyk stories. This is a story about the people who worked for him and were around him and had to deal with him. And it's their story, not his. And you don't just toss this story because he's no longer here. And in fact, the reporters, I think it was Katie who said that, you know, they, you know, when he did pass, they heard from some of the sources in the story saying, please tell me you're not going to spike the story now. And, you know, they couldn't. So then it came down to the timing and when do you go with it and when is too soon, if there even is such a thing. And look, if they waited 2 months, had a story that was done and ready to go and they waited 2 months, then, you know, in 2 months, first of all, there's still going to be people who say too soon. And there's going to be other people who say too late. Who cares? It's, you know, it's moved on. The other piece of this is you a lot of the behavior of Eugene Melnyk that's outlined in that story was not a secret as far as, you know, there were people in the senator's organization who must have known about this, including some who are still there. There were people in the league office who were alerted to some of this, including some that are still there. So the story's not over just because Eugene Melnyk is gone. There are some tough questions that I think need to be asked of some of the people who are around it, saying, you know, did you know about this? What did you do about it? Did you do anything for the employees who were having to work in these conditions? Those are all fair questions. And, you know, I will say that I mean, obviously, I've known Ian since we were kids, and I will stand up for him and his, you know, his ethics.
More cronyism at the Athletic, right,
yeah,
folks?
No, I mean, anyone who wants to go after Ian, put it this way. People listen to this podcast, they think I'm the nice guy. I go out with Ian, and I come back going like, wow, I'm a piece of shit. Because, man, I'm awful compared to this guy. He's, you know, he's beyond reproach in my eyes. And, I mean, Katie Strang and Dan Robson, two of the great, you know, investigative reporters, you're going to go after them. It's crazy. I mean, I think reading the story, I think it's pretty clear that they bent over backwards to be as fair as they possibly could to Eugene Melnyk under the circumstances. And I guess I'll leave it at that. But there's a lot to this story left as far as, you know, maybe some follow-up questions to be asked and whether somebody will ask them, you know, maybe the same reporters will, or we'll see where it goes. But, I mean, I don't think it's ever too soon to tell the truth about powerful people who have had enormous influence. And whatever you think of Eugene Melnick otherwise, he certainly fits that description.
Yeah, absolutely. Yeah, we'll move on here. So with the season winding down, one of the things I wanted to do is, I haven't seen a lot of this, is like circling back to the deadline or the run up to the deadline and looking at like the big trades that people made. And the thing that really kind of inspired this for me is like the Wild's turnaround in goal. I mentioned it earlier. Since the deadline, they have the best team save percentage in the league, or pretty close to it. Talbot's like 927, Fleury's 921, 922, something like that. So it's just like I wanted to check in on how everybody is doing with this, basically. First of all, I just took the guys, like the 10 or 11 guys who seem, I don't know, the most impactful. So like, I don't want to hear about, well, what you guys didn't talk about, like Nick Leddy. Yeah. Okay. That's fine. Yeah. I feel like nobody's hurt by us neglecting to talk about the fucking fifth best defenseman.
As long as Travis Hamonic is on the list, I'm good.
Yeah, there you go. Right. So let's go in alphabetical order by player. And we'll start with Andrew Kopp in New York. Scoring a lot.
Yeah, I didn't realize
in 14 games.
Like, I didn't realize he was scoring a point a game.
Yeah, more than that. Yeah, he's been very good. All indications are that the Rangers want to re-sign him, which he's going to cost a fair bit of money. And I don't know if he's a guy whose game necessarily holds up long term. But like, that's really all you need to know about him. And like, his underlying numbers with the Rangers are also insanely good. He's 56.6 expected goals in all situations. That's bananas. Yeah. So it's super duper worked out for the Rangers.
And I mean, he's shooting 17%.
Sure. And I'm sure his own ice shooting percent, I can look it up right now, but
it's
quite high, I'm sure.
Most of his, over half his assists are secondary assists, et cetera. But you know what? Maybe sometimes it's just a good fit. And I'm with you. I wouldn't be giving this guy like 6, 7, 8 years, but sometimes it legitimately is just the right fit. And maybe that's what's happened here. I mean, it's certainly, at the very least, if you're the Rangers, you're not regretting the deal at all.
You're getting
everything that you would ask for.
And to your point about he's got a high shooting percentage, he's only exceeding his individual expected goals by 0.08, which, I guess that is 20% above what the expected number is. But it's not like insane.
Yep.
So he's just been a solidly good player. Like, I think that worked out. The less said about Justin Braun, who was their other big deadline pickup, the better, I think. But how about this one? Jack Eichel to the Vegas Golden Knights. Has it worked out?
Well, I mean, it hasn't worked out, obviously, in the sense that this was supposed to be the final piece that put them over the hump to being cup favorites, and it certainly has not been that. I don't know that you blame Jack Eichel for it.
Right. And he, this is a guy who doesn't play hockey for, I don't remember, 14 months, something like that, like a more than a year. Really can't even like skate very much during that time. And he comes back and he has 12 goals and 21 points in 29 games on a team that's pretty badly banged up. We got to wait to see how the cookie crumbles with the impact of having Jack Eichel on the cap.
Yeah.
They're going to have to make
And that would be the
decisions.
Argument. Right. The argument would be, at least as far as this season, not only, has like Jack Eichel's been good, but he hasn't. I mean, I think even coming off an injury, you probably expect point a game from a guy like this. And he hasn't been that. And meanwhile, over in Buffalo, Alex Tuch has been productive at a similar rate. At half the cap hit. And that would be the argument is, if you're Vegas, you're saying, if we don't make this trade, we've got maybe a similar level of production from Alex Tuck, and we're not in cap hell, or at least we're in $5 million less of cap hell. They took a big swing, and so far it hasn't worked. The other thing on this is, you know, unlike a lot of these trades we're going to be talking about, Jack Eichel's got years and years left on his deal. This wasn't a one-time, let's see how this season goes.
Yeah, it's not a rental, yeah.
It could still work out great in hindsight, but not off to a great start, and I don't know that that's Jack Eichel's fault.
It's definitely not his fault, but yeah, I think you're right about that.
But like, this is going to be like he's now the new Taylor Hall, right? Like as far as being the guy where, you know, the losing seems to now follow him a little bit.
I got two words for you: mm-hmm. Born loser. Yeah, Jack Eichel.
That's it.
You know, like yeah. Next up, Marc-Andre Fleury. We mentioned it. I think Minnesota does this trade over 500 times. Mm-hmm. No problem. No questions asked. Correct. Don't even really need to talk about it too much. He's been very, very good. And, you know, it seems like, maybe this is a little bit storyline making, narrative making, but like, it seems like it kind of made Cam Talbot go, oh, maybe I should stop playing like shit.
Yeah. Yeah. Like, that
obviously that's dicey, but like we've seen it before where like having a guy who's like pretty clearly a starter but isn't playing that well gets pushed a little bit by a guy who is 100% intended to take his job.
Mm-hmm.
We saw this where I'm trying to think where else. Oh, Vegas with Marc-Andre Fleury a couple of years ago.
Heard of
you
him.
Know, so
yeah. Wait, would you buy into this idea that like part of the nightmare season in Vegas is that they made the same mistake that Pittsburgh made, which is they didn't realize that like basically Marc-Andre Fleury is such a wonderful guy that his absence dooms teams, much like it did with, you know, the Penguins took a step back when they moved on from him. Vegas, Chicago doesn't really have a step back to take, but
yeah, I think it's more that Lehner was hurt for a good chunk of the year.
That could be part of it too.
Did not help. All right.
But maybe Mark Fleury would have told him not to do that.
That's a good point. How about Mark Giordano in Toronto?
He's been real good.
Oh boy, has he! Obviously, he had that overtime winner last the other night, and then combined for that really nice old guy goal the other day.
Goal.
But like,
love an old guy goal.
62% expected goals for this guy. Whoa, boy. He's playing with Lilligren, right?
Yeah. Mostly, yeah.
Yeah. They've looked unbelievable together. Like, yep. Every and underlying number is like, oh, no, it's actually insane how good they've been.
And I think the Leafs are something like 12-2 since the trade. He has really, really helped. Jake Muzzin's out again. Like, he's Giordano has really stabilized that. In fact, it reminds me a little bit of, like, when the Leafs made the Brian Leetch deal back in 2004, and like he came in and you're like, holy crap, this guy's still really good and different,
still really
you know,
good.
Different level of player and, you know, more of an offensive guy. But now that year the Leafs went out in the first round still, so or in the second round, and so, you know, nobody looks back on that as being like a huge successful deal, and obviously like anything else in Toronto, it's going to be judged on the playoffs. But he's been, if not a perfect fit, a really, really good fit in Toronto.
Yeah, he's been exactly what you would want.
For a couple of second round picks, not even a question, the Leafs would take that again.
How about this? When he's on the ice, they score 60% of the goals, despite the fact that behind him, the Toronto goaltenders have so far given him an .881 save percentage.
Wow.
That's how dominant they've been.
Yeah.
That's fucking crazy.
Obviously, you know, he'd been in Calgary his whole career, and then he goes to Seattle. I didn't realize... I mean, I realized how good he was. He got won the Norris, but I didn't realize how good he still was, for mm-hmm. sure.
Yeah, I mean, he honestly, like, wasn't that great. Like, he was very good, but he wasn't anywhere near this in Calgary last year.
Last year.
And then in Seattle, he was awful. Well, not awful, but, like, very much below what you would expect from even, like, a middle-pairing defenseman, you know? Mm-hmm. And yeah, you put him with a couple of guys who can actually play uh-oh, look out.
Yep.
You know? So, yeah, an unequivocal win. But as you say, that won't be so unequivocal if they don't win in the playoffs. So who cares, mm-hmm. I guess, about the regular season. Claude Giroux.
Great. I think I mentioned this when the Leafs had that wild game against the Panthers. I didn't expect him to be this good, but he was everywhere in that game. Like, yeah, he was very, very, and you know, that's the danger, right? When you trade for an older guy who's had success in the past, but not recently, like, am I buying name value? Am I buying memories and reputation? He looks re-energized, and he looks like just a fantastic fit for that team.
Yeah, and he's got a ton of points, even though he's only shooting like 5% or something like that. He only has 2 goals, but he's still contributing to the offense and blah blah blah. Like, yeah, I like you. I was a little skeptical just based on, well, look, like, you know, he hasn't been himself, but they, you know, Florida, unlike Philadelphia, was in a position to, like, help him succeed.
Yeah. I thought he was going to be good. I did not. You know, to me, I hate to say it, but it was almost like the eye test even. It was just like, you know, when you're watching the Panthers, you know, obviously you notice Barkov all the time. You notice Huberto all the time. I was like, man, who's that kid out there flying around? And it's like, yeah, oh, that's right. That's grizzled veteran Claude Giroux. Awesome.
Yeah. But just to speak to the power of the Panthers overall, Ben Chiarot, do you know what his expected goals percentage is at 5-on-5 this year with the Panthers?
I'm going to say, did they get him all the way up to 50%?
61.5.
Yikes. That team's good, man.
Yeah, they're really good.
I really hope they just, as a neutral fan, if I was one, I hope they go all the way. That's,
yeah,
what a fun
really
team.
Fun team. Absolutely. Let's see here. Where is he? Brandon Hagel to Tampa.
Yeah. Is he given 2 first-round picks worth of production?
So he only has 3 goals, no assists in 16 games. So no.
Maybe right? If the Lightning had some finishers, he could get some assists.
Yeah, that's exactly right. You know, his underlying numbers are fine, but here's the tricky part for him. They're shooting less than 5% when he's on the ice, and their save percentage when he's on the ice so far has been 851.
Oof.
851, folks.
Wow.
That's like 1 in every 7-ish shots going in the net, 7.5-ish. Mm-hmm. That's not really sustainable in either direction when your PDO is like 90-ish, yeah. 91.
He's a -6, which is, you know, plus minus is bad, of course.
To only be a -6 with those numbers is actually true. Pretty impressive, yeah. I got to be honest with you. Yeah. I think what I would say is every underlying number except goals for percentage is solid. And so the low cap hit and the locked in-ness of his contract, like, I think this is one the Lightning would do again, but obviously, like, you just kind of got to go, hey, what are you going to do? Percentages run against you sometimes, you know?
Yeah. Although I'm looking at, like, his on-ice save percentages in, well, I was going to say his entire career, but I don't know. It's because he was 88% last year, 87% this year with Chicago, now down to 86%. But it's still a really small sample. And yeah. Chicago's goaltending famously kind of stunk last year. So,
Is that true?
Yeah, they traded for a guy in the offseason. So
what do you know?
And a defenseman. So they fixed it though. It's good.
Okay. Fine now. That's good. Yeah. And I'm just gonna look up really quickly who he plays with. Yeah, Cirelli and Colton.
Yeah, he's third line guy. They're trying to sort of get that
Killorn. Yeah,
yeah, trying to get that Coleman Gaudreau magic back on the third line. Which
they got time to figure it out.
He's not there to score. He's, you know, he's there sure to be not. The, yeah. You need a little bit of scoring from your depth in a playoff run, but no. He's...
I did see the other day Ross Colton's up to like 20-something goals this year or something like that. Like whatever the number, what he scored in whatever game I was watching. And I was just like, really? Ross Colton has that many fucking goals? Yeah, 19. Would you have ever guessed that in your entire life? That Ross Colton could be a 19-20 goal guy in the
NHL? I would
NHL?
Not have, no.
No, yeah, crazy. So good for him. He scored a Stanley Cup winning goal recently. Mm-hmm. All right, let's go on to Marcus Johansson to the Washington Capitals. A guy that he's only gotten into 12 games. I don't think he's produced very much. Nope. But again, like his, yeah, two goals and a secondary assist. His underlyings are fine. And so if you're bringing him in for depth and he didn't cost very much, like I think that all makes sense. And plus he's like a known quantity to them. He's another guy with like an 850 something save percentage when he's on the ice. So it's not really his fault that they're getting outscored when he's on the ice. They, I don't know if you heard about this. Washington maybe has a little bit of a goaltending problem.
I'm surprised it hasn't come up.
So yeah, they're, you know, again, but like it doesn't cost him very much. I think that's fine.
I believe he's, you know, he's playing a little bit of power play time. He's kind of been nudging up, playing a bit with Backstrom on the second line. Like you would like some more production. But if anything, you're right. He didn't cost much. If anything, the question when the Capitals got him was, did they get enough? Is that what they should be getting versus, you know, should they have addressed goaltending or something else? And I think if they do end up making an early exit, it's not going to be because Marcus Johansson didn't do enough. It's going to be because maybe Marcus Johansson was all that they went and got.
Right. Yeah, if you're making decisions based on, well, look, we got to, the guy we can bring in is Marcus Johansson. You're not exactly like, and we hope he saves our season.
Yeah.
So.
Yep.
Hampus Lindholm in Boston hasn't played a ton of games. He's only played 7 games so far. But
yep.
Everything he's done besides stay healthy, he's been fucking incredible at. He's been exactly what they thought they were trading for.
Mm-hmm. Yep. So just a question of, it's into that he's not playing this week, and we're into that kind of section of the year where you never know what that means. That can mean anything from, you know, he's day to day, I believe,
right,
as opposed to anything that they've said is long term. But day to day can mean anything from he's got a very, very slight injury and we're just resting him up for the playoffs, versus he can barely walk, but we're going to throw him out there anyways because it's that time of year. So it really doesn't tell you anything. But when healthy, yeah, he's been a great fit.
Yeah. Not a lot else to say. That he's exactly what they've needed him to be, which is help on the blue line, especially, again, they can't stay healthy back there. So that's great. Defenseman, maybe we're less enthused about Josh Manson.
Yeah,
hasn't been particularly good. Cheap for sure, but you know, on a team like the Colorado Avalanche, you don't want to be in the 45% XG range.
No,
you know, or indeed the 39% goals for range. So, you know, they brought him in for depth. They didn't cost very much. I think that's fine, but knowing how some of the other defensemen we've talked about shook out, maybe there's a little bit of buyer's remorse, but also, yeah, again, like...
And you got to remember the timing, right? Like, they went and got him... he was, like, the first big move of the days leading up to the deadline. Didn't cost a ton. Didn't have to give up a first. And people kind of went, okay. And then, like, the Ben Chiarot deal happens and a couple of other, you know, forward moves happen and prices seem high and everyone goes, oh my God, the Avalanche did great. They got in before the market went crazy. And then you had like Giordano and Lindholm and guys like that, where now maybe you look at it and say, maybe they should have waited. But Joe Sakic's pretty good at this, so.
Yeah, far be it for us to second guess old Joe Sakic. He seems to have a plan for everything. So
does.
You know, that's fine. Rickard Rakell to Pittsburgh.
I always forget that that one even happened.
I think the Penguins kind of forget that as well. He's actually been pretty good, but like he's not. Is he like the like, oh, this is what's going to kick our offense into high gear? No, not really. You know?
And has been playing a little bit on the first line with Crosby. So, I mean, but yeah. Again, like it's Pittsburgh. That's not necessarily a.
Right. They could get a random fan could be a 45-point
player. The Mark Donk scenario. Yeah, 100%. But I always got the feeling with that deal that, like, you know, Burke was on deadline day, one of the shows early-ish, like around lunchtime. And he was like, we're probably not doing anything. And I actually believed him. Like, it didn't feel like a smokescreeny. I feel like that just kind of fell into their lap late. Like, the Ducks hadn't moved him, and they circled back and said, you know, slapped a 20% off discount sticker on him. And Pittsburgh was like, yeah, what the hell? So, you know, it's sort of anything they get is, I'm not going to say anything they get is a bonus, because obviously they did give up assets to get him, but I don't think they were expecting the world from him, and he's actually been pretty good.
Yeah. Yeah. He mostly played with Malkin, at least to start, and then they didn't really do a ton, and the numbers have gotten better with playing with Crosby more recently. So I guess what you would say is hopefully it's trending in the right direction for them. But again, they didn't have to give up a huge amount to get him. So that seems like it's fine. Like you say, if this is a trade that dropped into their lap and it's a player, I think we can all say, oh yeah, we like that guy, you know, you take it. Last one here, Tyler Toffoli, obviously he's played almost as many games with the Flames at this point as he did with Montreal. Started hot, maybe not so much lately.
Yeah, he's cooled off.
Yeah. But again, like a player the team controls, a team that, or a player everybody recognized, yeah, that guy's good. He can play, you know?
Yep.
I think Calgary, again, does that trade 100 times out of 100. This is Gaudreau, Tkachuk insurance, all that kind of stuff. Like, very easy decision, but yeah, he has cooled off.
He has cooled off, and the only thing you maybe worry a little bit about is, you know, he was on Montreal, and I don't know if you remember this, but Montreal had a long playoff run last year.
What?
And they, yeah, it's, is he maybe hitting a bit of that wall that we talked about, fatigue-wise? But I'm not worried about that yet. Let's see. Let's let him get back on. But yeah, he looked like an A+ a few weeks ago, and it's cooled off a bit since then. But still, still a solid move.
Yep.
And you're absolutely right. Not one that is just being judged based on this year.
Yeah. This is what's he got? 2 years left after this one?
I think it was a 4-year deal, wasn't it?
Yeah. So there you go. All right. We'll wrap up here with two quick things. Some sad news. Mike Bossy obviously passed away. Everybody knows about that. And it seems like Guy Lafleur is also maybe, there were some jumping the gun, let's say, on his.
Canadians put out a statement basically saying that they understand that people are concerned with his health, but have asked for privacy.
Much like the Bossy thing a couple of weeks ago, it gets
almost identical. Just two guys that, you know, I don't know. I'm at that age where I didn't get to watch Guy Lafleur in his prime. I saw him later when towards the end of Montreal and then his comeback. I was so young with Mike Bossy's prime that it was like, to me, I was like, oh, I guess there's just always a guy who scores 60 goals every year, and then only later realized there wasn't. Two of the greats, two of the absolute legends, just phenomenal offensive players. Mike Bossy, you could make a case as the greatest goal scorer in the history of the NHL, period. Mm-hmm. And Guy Lafleur,
I mean, at this point, right?
I mean, you know, yeah, we could say Gretzky, Lemieux, there's other guys, but Bossy's, you can't put it this way. You can't have the conversation without Mike Bossy at all.
Bingo. Yeah.
And then, you know, Guy Lafleur, not just, you know, a legendary player, but, you know, just the look, right? The hair flying back, you know, in the forum, going down the wing. I mean, this is, even if you weren't a hockey fan, if you were a sports fan in the 70s, like, that's what a hockey player looked like to you. That was, you know, a Montreal Canadian. It was, you know, just an absolute legend. So, I mean, thoughts with, you know, with them, families, and the fan bases, because it's, you know, and especially in Montreal, where, you know, not only Lafleur was a legend, but Mike Bossy was a Montreal kid, and always they had a lot of affection for him there. And it was, you know, maybe in some sense a little bit fitting that the Islanders were in Montreal the day that he passed, and there was a nice tribute there.
That was, yeah. But yeah, you know, we're getting to that age where all the players that everybody talked about when we were kids are just gonna, this is gonna keep happening, you know?
Yeah, unfortunately. I mean, both of them still, though, you know, relatively young,
sure.
in their 60s. It's very, very tough news.
Yeah. And then the last thing we wanted to talk about today is, you had asked me to explain what happened with Hobey Baker-winning goaltender Dryden McKay.
Mm-hmm.
Because he has been banned by an anti-doping agency, the U.S. anti-doping agency, I believe, for 6 months for taking a supplement that contained an unknown but banned substance. So, yeah, I mean, the story is that, like, around the time he was going to be an alternate for Team USA going to the Olympics, I was a little surprised that they didn't fully name him to the team at the time. Mm-hmm. But he was always going to be an alternate. And he, around that time, he started taking a supplement which contained a banned substance that it didn't advertise on the label or anything like that. And so, yeah, I mean, that's basically what happened. He tested positive. He's like, that's really weird. I don't know why that happened. And the company that made it, like, shipped a sealed bottle to the testing lab, and they were like, yep, it's in here and it's not on the label. So,
mm-hmm. Yeah, we should say that, because I always am very, very skeptical whenever you hear the, it was a tainted supplement.
I didn't know, yeah.
You know, like, we've heard that a million times. But absolutely, in this case, you know, actually, now, was it the, like, did the Olympic doping not clear him but reduce the penalty, or is this all coming from
this the is US? All coming from the USADA, yeah.
Yeah. Okay.
So it's a situation where people are a little bit mad about it, because he, how do I want to put this? He just went through the full appeals process of, like, you know, okay, well, we got, like, yeah, I tested positive for this banned substance, but, like, let's start the process of being like, this isn't my fault, basically. And that all happened during the college hockey season.
Yeah. And nobody knew about this, right? Or was this, were there rumors? Were there anything? Like,
No, I didn't hear a single word about this at all day, or all season. I mean, it just came out, you know, he got cleared, or his basically, if he hadn't appealed, he would have missed, like, the NCAA tournament, the entire thing.
Yeah.
But because he appealed, it gave him just enough time to make it all the way to the national championship game, and win the Hobey Baker, and then all this comes out.
Right.
So, it happens. He was originally banned 4 years. They knocked it down to 6 months because they were like, yeah, this is pretty clearly unintentional. But like, you got to be smarter about what you put in. Like, that's the lesson.
And also, like, at least according to him, and again, take it with a grain of salt because we hear this all the time, but the amount was so
small. Like a trillionth of a, yeah. Like he had just started taking the supplement. Mm-hmm.
So it's not like one of these things where, you know, some people would say like, yeah, even if you were accidentally taking performance enhancing substances, if it was still enhancing your performance, does that take
And you did it for six months wins or whatever. Yeah. Right. But
and the answer that would seem to be no.
Yeah. So, right. Like he, I fully buy that this was unintentional. Now, again, like this becomes a question that some people might have about like, well, part of the reason that he won the Hobie Baker over other players, including a goalie who won the Goalie of the Year award, and not the Hobie Baker, is that like his character is such a big aspect of it. And when people in college hockey say character, they mostly mean he played more college hockey than the other guy. He played like 3 or 4 years instead of 1 or 2.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. And now, so the question everybody has is, if people knew about this, do they vote for him to win the Hobie Baker? I think even if we're going to do what I'm doing, which is saying, you know, he didn't mean to do this, there was no intentionality there, I think that probably does cost him some votes, honestly. And it maybe means he doesn't win the Hobie, but he's still in the top three or something like that. That totally makes sense to me. But the only thing I got to say is, boy, I'm glad I didn't get up on my high horse and get all sanctimonious about character matters and this kind of thing, and then the guy gets banned by an anti-doping agency. I'm glad I wasn't the one that happened to. But again, I don't think he did it on purpose or anything like that. So,
okay, all right, I will take your vouching for him into consideration and maybe give him the benefit of the doubt.
Yeah, like I say, I mean, the lesson here is obviously, like, if you're an athlete who is subject mm-hmm. to this kind of testing, and to be clear, like, there is this kind of testing in NCAA hockey, but it's fully randomized, and McKay says he was never tested once in his 4 years, which I guess is just kind of how it goes for a lot of guys. But you know, under greater scrutiny, this kind of thing can happen to anybody. So,
yep,
that's the lesson here. Sean, yeah. What do you got to plug, my friend?
What do I have to plug? You know, I'm at The Athletic. You can find my writing there. The weekly power rankings are winding down, obviously, for the season, so we can see how that all shakes out. And check out my podcast with Ian Mendez on Thursdays, The Athletic Hockey Show.
And for me, my plugs is, why don't you go to epringside.com. All week we are having, if you just sign up for epringside.com, you don't even have to pay for a subscription. We're doing basically a free week. And there is a code right now. If you use the code $1, all capital letters, and spell out one, not the number one, $1 means your first month will be $1. And
not bad.
Not as expensive. Or if you want to sign up for an annual subscription with the code ILOVEP, they'll tack a bunch of 3 months on at the end for free. So it's more of a 15-month subscription for the price of a 12-month. And then the other plug, of course, is go to the Puck Soup Patreon, where we did a bonus episode last week where we did a call-in show on our Discord, and we're going to do mailbags, and me and Greg are doing all our little side podcasts that Greg is actually allowed to do. So... Mm-hmm. Yeah, check it all out. We got a ton of stuff going on over there, as always. And that's it. Thank you for the support. Thank you for listening. And we'll talk to you next week. See you later.
Bye-bye.
Sticks and it's hits and goals and saves and slap shots and goons. We've got sportly commentary to an NFL commute. But we also cover movies, TV shows, eats and tunes. It's your weekly bowl of hockey and nonsense. Bog soup.